mind, but people let it go because he's not a guy that people expect much from. So is it unfair? Yeah. Is it just? No. But it's just sometimes it's just a way of the world. And you come to LeBron and certain things when you're talking about, okay, now they can wear a jersey and those things. A lot of people don't need to wear a jersey or say something or have a message because look at their actions. Look at their actions and look and see what they're doing. I don't need necessarily put on a jersey as the Black Lives Matter and do those things to still, if I'm out here doing certain things and getting with police officers, getting with educators, city managers, and sitting there and saying, what is the plan? And sitting and actually having a conversation. And it's not, I'm not talking to them. People just ought to be reminded because there's a huge population that's trying to fix things. But sometimes they're just trying to fix things. And that's what's been going on since the beginning of time, that they're just trying to fix things and saying, this is what you should do when you're not living that life. So until we can sit there and say, hey, look, I understand what you're trying to do, but here's what's going on, and explain, and now see if people can go back and go to the think, get the right people and try to like fix it the right way. Because a lot of things, it's being, this is what we need to do. It's no tolerance. These are things. I was talking to the police chief and all these different things, and it's a no tolerance, one strike. And it's like, man, but okay, I understand that. You know, I get it, but what are we doing? What are some of the other things we can do to prevent some of these different issues? So people just need to be able to open up and listen and not just think that it's one way, because we'll never get in the way if it's just one way.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station. Good morning and welcome to your 7 o'clock hour of Joe Lowe and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game. Thank you for riding shotgun with us today. We hope you guys had an awesome weekend. One news and note for you. Dibs is out. John Dickinson in his stead. Two guests coming up today. Nick Friedell in 26 minutes at 7:30. NBA reporter for ESPN. What's next for the Lakers? Rajon Rondo breaks his thumb in practice over the weekend. He's out 6 to 8 weeks. Avery Bradley is sitting out the restart. J.R. Smith was signed, but because Rondo was hurt in the bubble, you don't get an opportunity to bring another player in. So the Lakers already off on a shaky, rocky start. Fred Smoot, former Washington Redskins cornerback, in 1 hour at 8 o'clock, as the team announced today that they are retiring the Redskins name and logo and are working towards a new nickname for the franchise moving forward. 7 years ago today, on July 13th, 2013, at Petco Park in San Diego, this happened.
Right field, and he dives! He's got it! Hunter Pence robbing Amarista of a hit, something no Padre has had in 8 innings against Lincecum.
Timmy Lincecum with a 148-pitch no-hitter against the San Diego Padres. The Giants go on to win that game 9-0. That was Hunter Pence saving the day in the bottom of the eighth with a sliding grab in right field to send Lincecum to the final frame. Timmy finishes 9 innings pitched, no hits, no runs, 13 strikeouts, 4 walks, 6 ground ball outs, 8 fly ball outs, 13 strikeouts. The Pence grab. JD, the thing that pops off the page here more than anything else is the 148 pitches. Insane to think in a season where the Giants weren't that great compared to what had happened the year before and the year after, that Boach would have him out there for 148 pitches. But what are you going to do? Look at how many Giants fans were in San Diego for this game. If you're Boach, do you think you were even sweating about making the decision whether or not to pull Lincecum, or were you letting him go as long as he wasn't giving up a hit?
Well, he admitted as much that he was sweating, but at the same time, he wasn't going to take him out. And that's, it just goes to show the relationship that Bruce Bochy had not only with Tim Lincecum, but with all those guys of that championship era, where the trust was at the utmost. And Bruce Bochy, I think, one of the few managers in today's day and age that, you know, he still has that throwback in him. He still has that ability to appreciate the moment that goes beyond the win and the loss and the big picture and the innings limit and all of this. And he also knew, hey, Lowe, he's got a guy that He's got a guy that can handle himself out there in Tim Lincecum. He's got a guy that, you know, didn't ice his arm and had sort of the rubber arm at that point of his career. He was the one guy that he probably felt more comfortable letting him, you know, just try and finish the deal.
Yeah, let him gut it out. And Timmy did gut it out, 147 pitches. Yeah, now you'd be like, oh, my God, what is the manager doing? What is the skipper doing? I just think that, you know, would this happen today? I don't know if it would happen as frequent. Of course not, because pitchers don't, you know. But I just think that you're in a situation, if a guy's got something going like that and it's special, it's hard to yank guys out of games. It's hard to sit and stop a guy, especially, you know, in that moment and he's got something going. That's one thing. There's a lot of pitchers. There's been hundreds and thousands of pitchers in this great game of baseball. A lot of them can't say, I got a no-no. A lot of them can't say, I got a no-no. So when you have that opportunity and you're threatening a no-no, it'd be tough for these skippers to just pull a guy out.
At what point do you step in, though? So say he gets through the ninth, but say it's a tie game. Fortunately, the Giants are blowing out the Padres this night. It's 9-0. You never have to worry about that. But imagine the game's nothing-nothing. Imagine the Giants haven't figured out a way to put her on the board. Now you're going to the 10th, and he's got 148 pitches under his belt. And you're getting extra innings. Like, at what point if you're Boach do you decide we got to get him out? I know it's a wild hypothetical, but imagine it goes 13, 14 innings. You're going to leave him out there for 250 pitches? Right. Like, at some point, you got to be like, all right, enough's enough here.
Yeah,
you're probably rooting for the Padres to get a hit to just end the damn thing.
Yeah, at that particular time, you're like, hey, just get us a hit. I think if you go 9, though, I think if that's 9, if something happens in the 10th, you can't. You got to understand. And that was a lot. That pitch counts a lot. Is it the most ever? Probably not, but it's darn near close to it. So I think that situation, you go another inning, you got to be like, done. And here's the situation.
So you'd send him out for the 10th.
No.
And if he gets through it, you wouldn't send him out for the 10th.
No, if a guy pitches a no-hitter in 9 innings, I would just be done. You're done, no matter what. You get through that game, you're done. I don't care. No circumstance would I let a guy go 10 innings. But, you know, no circumstance.
Great sports talk radio the next day. It'd be great sports talk radio
you
the next
so,
day.
You think so, though? But a guy went 9 innings, and he finished. You're like, look, he got a no-hitter. It went on his record, no-hitter. He went 9 innings. He completed a complete game. I couldn't jeopardize. He already was up and count. I didn't want to do it anyway.
Not a complete game because it wasn't finished. I guess you could call it. He went hitless through 9.
It wouldn't count as a no-hitter. It would not count as a no-hitter unless the game ended that way.
If I'm Lincecum, I'd be in the dugout screaming at everybody. Screaming at everybody. What else y'all need? Anybody need anything else? I'll go up there and win this thing.
It could go as a combined no-hitter if he, let's say, he pitches 9 and then a reliever pitches the 10th, they score in the 10th.
Suck when it's like, hey,
so you'd be a part of a combined no-hitter.
Six pitchers combined for a no-hitter. It's like, I don't care. I don't care about any of that. Six pitchers came together. Don't call that a no-hitter. You gave up zero hits. It's not a no-hitter. A no-hitter is one guy, 9 innings, game ends. If you go to the 10th, so be it. Lincecum's got to step up there. And I wonder what he did at the plate that night, by the way. We gotta check that.
Yeah, why are you looking that up? It's just tough though for a skipper to say, hey, you're gonna go another to the 10th inning. You're in that situation. Like, all right, I got to do this. I'm gonna pull it. And yeah, the guy'd be disappointed, but I think he would even know. And Timmy would have came out. This is just one of those things that the Bolchies, the skipper, was like, hey, crowd's in it. Let's go ahead and do this thing.
Today's show is brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises. Chilton Auto Body text line 888-957-9570. What would you have done if you're Boach? And this is going to the 10th inning. Do you leave Lincecum out there after he's thrown 148 pitches? 888-957-9570. Nick Friedel is going to join us at 7:30. JD, what are you doing? 148 pitches, 0-0 after 9. Are you sending him back out there in the 10th?
I think if it's Tim Lincecum, I'm probably doing it. If it's, you know, another pitcher, if it's Madison Bumgarner, I'm probably doing it. If it's Matt Cain, I'm probably doing it. If it's, you know, another pitcher, I don't know that I'm doing it. I mean,
Tyler
Beattie. Tyler Beattie, I'm probably not doing it.
You're going to take that moment of glory away from Tyler Beattie?
At 148 pitches, I might be taking that moment away. Because the guy did wind up needing Tommy John surgery. So
all those drunk fans, though. Hey, do you have the audio again, nice guy? This is in Petco Park, by the way. Listen to how loud of a reaction you get when Hunter Pence makes a diving, sliding catch in the 8th inning to preserve Lincecum's no-hitter. Take a listen.
Right field. And he dives! He's got it! Hunter Pence robbing Amarista of a hit. something no Padre has had in eight innings against Winsicum.
That's Petco Park, July 13th, 7 years ago. They would have been so furious. They're so liquored up as is. It's July in San Diego. You know everyone's going nuts wanting to see a no-hitter. He doesn't come back out there for the 10th. Place would have gone nuts as you can go in San Diego in mid-July at Petco Park. What did he do at the plate that night, JD? Did you look that up?
I did. He had four at-bats in the game, and he walked in the fifth inning. He actually led off the fifth inning and walked against Edinson Volquez and scored a run. So he didn't have a hit, but he did walk, and he was on the bases. He scored a run. So he was a part of the action in that ball game. In addition to the no-no. I'm trying to see if he had to run. He walked, and then there was a couple of strikeouts. There was a single. He went to second. Buster Posey had a single. He went to second. And then Pablo Sandoval hit a single, so he went to third. So it was station to station. And then Hunter Pence actually hit a triple. So three runs scored on the triple, but Lincecum was on third. So he was station to station after his walk in scoring.
For this day in history, Lincecum throws the no-hitter, 148 pitches against the Padres 7 years ago. If you go back 86 years ago, Babe Ruth hit his 700th home run. At the time, nobody in baseball history had ever recorded 350 home runs. Here comes Babe Ruth hitting his 700th home run. He finished the season with 708. That was the end of his Yankees career. And then he went to the Braves and hit six or seven more. And that was the conclusion of the home runs for George Herman Babe Ruth. I was thinking about this earlier. If you could go back in time, if you could travel back to see any player or any sporting event, what do you think it would be? Because I think about like the... Babe Ruth's numbers are ridiculous, but I always wonder, everyone talks about the hot dog and beer diet. Like a guy like that, what would he have been like in today's Major League Baseball? It seemed like he crushed whatever was being thrown out there back then. But what was the pitching like? Would a guy like that today even make it to the show? 888-957-9570. If you're going back through time, any player, any era, any game, any sporting event, what pops off the page at you, JD? What do you think you'd want to go see?
Well, Babe Ruth would definitely pop off the page. I mean, I would love to see, you know, Willie Mays, you know, playing for the New York Giants in the early 50s, you know, from a baseball standpoint. I'd love to go back and watch, you know, Bill Russell and Wilt Chamberlain, you know, go at it, you know, in that run when maybe the Celtics were winning titles and just to see how they played. NFL, it's interesting. I don't go as far back. Like, I mean, I was a baby when, like, the catch happened. Like, I'd love to go back and be at that game, like, where the catch happened with Montana to Dwight Clark. I mean, I think it was, like, 2 days after my first birthday when that happened. So so I was around, but I wasn't watching it.
Well, where are you at?
Yeah, I think, you know what, I would love to. Something about New York. JD, it always does that for me. And a guy that I loved in just the aura is just, Broadway Joe. You know, Joe Namath in New York, the way that he was revered and the games and all the stuff that he did. I think just that era and just being in New York and how it was, it always just gives you watching kind of the mob and the gangsters and how they would dress in New York and Chicago. It's just, I think that would have been very interesting to go to those times to kind of watch. Of course, you know, like Babe, of course, Babe Ruth had been awesome. Joe Namath, you see him winning that Super Bowl and how he walked down the street in New York, how it was. He was an awesome guy. And also, man, like a guy that would love to see is the Olympics, what Jesse Owens did. I mean, think about that time to see a guy that was so dominant and to be there for those games would have been unbelievable.
Okay, I thought about that one as well. I was coming up with a list of different moments. But here's what I thought. As historic as that was, you still got to go to Nazi Germany for that event. And I'm thinking to myself, would I really have wanted to be in Nazi Germany for that event? Right?
Like, but you would still have money. But would you? So when you're putting this hypothetical, would you be just who you are? Would you kind of be like that? You know how that you get
different. You can be whoever you want to be safe. You know what I'm saying? You being a black man in Nazi Germany, right, rooting for Jesse Owens, that could be a bit of an issue for you.
I think we would all agree
to that.
Okay, there we go.
So what I would say is you can be whatever you want to go there and you can be safe. But like that environment, it just seems so heavy. Like, it was on my list, and then I kept thinking, it could be the number one moment, or it could end up being, like, a number 10 moment, because I'm trying to think, being over there with everything that was going on in the world, how would you even be processing that? Like, I don't even know how I would be taking that in. I think the weight of that is just so heavy, I'm not sure where that lands. It's up there. I don't know if it would be number one, but I think ultimately if I could deal with the gravity of the situation, it's probably number one. It's one of those seminal moments.
Right, right.
What I figured you were going to go, and this, I kind of sprung this on you guys, so my apologies. I figured you would have gone with Ali.
Ali.
Something Ali related. That's
Manila.
What I was thinking. You would have gone Thrill in Manila?
Uh-huh.
Would that have been the choice?
But the only reason, Joe, I didn't, I was like, okay, if I give him too many of this guy's jokes, I'm like, all right, Lo, come on, give me one. What do you think?
Okay, so
I was
you're like, right. So, that's probably what I would have done. You know me pretty well. All right, so now I'm giving you a pass. Now you can move on to another one. You go with Jesse Owens. What else would you go with?
Without a doubt. Watching Ali, you know, Thrill in Manila, him and George Foreman, where he didn't seem like all odds was against him. Ali, Kumbaya, Ali, Kumbaya. Just the chance, all the things.
Wasn't it Ali, Bumaye?
Bumaye, yeah.
Bumaye. Kumbaya.
Yeah, I got it.
It's a good one regardless.
Another lowism. Another lowism.
I saw you smile like, okay, he's got this one mixed up here. But yeah, that would have been great. I think I would have loved to be on the Titanic and I've got to live, you know. That would have been pretty awesome too, huh, JD?
Not really a sports moment, but sure, if you could have ended up living. You could have been Rose and Dibs could have been Jack and Dibs drowns and you live by floating on that piece of wood.
What?
Oh, my God. From the 831 on the Chilton Auto Body text line, the Miracle on Ice. Yeah. I mean, Lake Placid, New York, when that takes place, shouldn't have taken that long for us to get to that one. From the 408. Oh, this is just. Joe, I would like to go back in time when Lo met OJ.
I knew that was coming.
That's just surprised. Wrong. It's Monday morning for crying out loud. Let's save the OJ jokes for later in the week. Jeez, Lo, you deserve more than that. From the 760, I'd go back to the Malice at the Palace. That'd be kind of awesome. If you're on the other side of the arena and you can just see it, but you're not going to get hit by anything, I might have to move that up the rankings, to be honest with you. There are two that stand out, like right off the top, after Jesse Owens, there were two I wrote down just from a gravity of the moment situation. It wouldn't be top 10 or anything like that, but I always get so worked up when we play the Baron Davis dunk on Kirilenko. I would have loved to have been in the building when that happened because that place absolutely explodes. One I rank higher, though, 2004 ALCS Yanks Red Sox. So the Yanks had the 3-0 series lead. It ends up going 7. I was living in San Diego at the time, and my best friend there, one of my best friends in the world, is a big-time Yankees fan. And I just remember the weight of that day, not just on him, but on the sports world. Like, the Yanks had this 3-0 series lead. The Red Sox were a joke. They were kind of America's team because they were these, like, lovable losers who couldn't get over the hump. The Yanks were the evil empire. Most people who, no matter who you were a fan of, the Red Sox were kind of like the Cubs, right? They were like your second favorite team. You just wanted to see them break through. The Red Sox are insufferable now, but back then you wanted to see them break through. And they come back, and it's like David Ortiz, miracle after miracle. They win game 4, they win game 5, they win game 6. And then I remember during the week, I don't know what day, maybe a Tuesday or whatever, game 7 was that night. And I just remember my friend, he skipped all his law school classes that day. He was just on his phone with his friends all day long, and he was sweating bullets. Just the whole day, he was sick to his stomach about the fact that the Sox were going to come back and win this thing. He had no confidence in the Yanks. None of his friends had confidence in the Yanks. They were trying to hype each other up, and no one was buying into it. And I just remember how that was one of those days where you woke up, and in my world, loving sports the way that I do, that was just at the forefront. The weather didn't matter. The rest of your life didn't matter. Your dating life and none of that stuff. Nothing mattered except that game, and you were just watching the clock until first pitch. I would have loved to have been in Yankee Stadium for that game. Love to. Johnny Damon hits the grand slam early in that game. I mean, it wasn't a close one. It was like the least compelling of all the games. But to have just been in the Bronx that night, I think that would rank very high on the list for me because I just remember living in Southern California during that. And the weight of that day leading up to that game, it was incredible.
Do you think out of the football game, I'm gonna give you a college one and I'll give you a pro one, which game would you have better been at? The Macklin reception with Franco Harris or the ban in Stanford?
The immaculate reception or the ban?
JD?
Probably the immaculate reception, given what was on the line. I mean, Stanford-Cal was what? That was Cal preventing Stanford from getting to a bowl game. And not a good bowl game, just a bowl game, right? So it's a big game, don't get me wrong. But the immaculate reception was a huge game. So probably the NFL game, but it's close. That's a good question. JD, where do you land?
The NFL game for sure. Yeah, the immaculate reception. I think that's the Cal Stanford play is it's crazy, it's goofy, but there's some extreme local bias here in Northern California for that game.
Okay.
What else would be on your list then? Like if you could go back in time for any sporting event, any event, like I'm picking stuff I was actually alive for, which is crazy.
And that tends to be where I lean. Like there were two that came to mind, and I don't know how I got on this a couple of weeks ago, but I was on one of my walks, and I'm just filtering through YouTube and old games, and I got locked in on the 2001 World Series. So this was after 9/11.
Oh, Yanks D-backs,
and it was Yanks D-backs, but it was Game 3. And what I was actually looking at was the old public address announcer. Bob Shepard, right? At Yankee Stadium, he lived to be like 99 years old, and he was the PA announcer for 50 years. And I went through and I just started watching Game 3 of that World Series. So it was the first game back in New York in the World Series. You know, obviously about a month after 9/11, month and a half after 9/11. And I'm here are the lineups and all this stuff, and they run through the lineup, and then the President of the United States comes out. And remember, President Bush, at the time, he came out and he threw out the first pitch. And just the emotion and the electricity and the signs and everything, everybody's chanting USA, USA. And he comes out and he gets right up on top of the mound and he fires a perfect strike and everybody's cheering. And, you know, that World Series wound up being a great World Series. And it didn't matter at that point, your politics or your issues or anything like that. It was just a unifying, hey, everybody's together, we're all American, kind of a moment at the World Series in New York. It honestly gave me chills to go back and watch and then watch a little bit of that game. So that was not even 20 years ago, obviously. But that was one that stood out. The other one was
That series, Game 7, Luis Gonzalez off Mariano Rivera to win it. Like that series came all the way down to the last at bat. That was a great series. Phil Mickelson had bet the Diamondbacks to win the World Series before the season started that year. He made a huge killing. What was the other one?
That was a great series. The other one was the Bill Buckner game, the Red Sox Mets game. Just because that game, and again, that game, there's been all these old games on, so that game I've watched a couple of times, and that game was just bizarre and nutty, and it was, and just the crowd in New York and all of the different things that happened in that game, the Mets come back, the Red Sox go ahead, the Mets tie it, Dave Henderson hits a home run. All of these things happen, wild pitches and bloop singles, and it looks like the Mets are done, and then it all culminates in Buckner, ball going through his legs, and the Mets win the game, and then the Mets wind up winning the next night, or winning, was it the next night, or there might have been a rain delay, and then they won the next night. I can't remember, but...
In the head to want to go back and see Buckner's life fall apart right in front of you like that. You want to go see Bartman reach over the fence as well?
No.
Watch him get escorted out of the building?
It's not that. It's just the game. It's the drama of the game. I can't even imagine being a – could you imagine being a Mets fan that night and it's game six of the
World Series? I could never imagine being a Mets fan. No.
I know.
Never.
I know you couldn't. But just if your team, it's do or die, it's game six, you're down to your last strike a couple of different times, you're in the house – it's a Saturday night, and your team just comes. They keep coming back. They keep coming back. I mean, it would just be a wild. They're going to lose. They're going to tie it. Is there going to be a game tomorrow? That would just be, I think, a fantastic race.
It was amazing, though. Amazing to watch this country come together, especially after 9/11. You know what? I was in Cincinnati, Joe, with the Bengals, JD, and canceling that first week.
George Bush come to that game as well?
No, he didn't, Joe. My point I'm trying to make is when they would do, the fly. You would just go to break the flyover and everything.
Go ahead.
We're out of time. No, just the flyover. The 2 weeks later, when we did resume play, to be on that sideline and they do the national anthem and the Jets fly over and you're just thinking, what happened? There wasn't a dry eye on that sideline. And it wasn't because we knew we were going to lose the game. It was just to be a stop joke. Just to be an American.
It's a good
line. It was unreal.
We'll keep taking them on the Chilton Auto Body text line. We'll do some calls as well if you want to get down. Babe Ruth, 86 years ago today, hit his 700th home run. If you could go back in time to any event in sports history, what would you want to go back and see? For some reason, I'd love to go see Notre Dame under Newt Rockne. I don't know why I want to go back to the 20s to watch college football, but for some reason that pops as well. Numbers 888-957-9570. What's coming up on the game is brought to you by Chilton Auto Body. Nick Friedel, NBA reporter for ESPN. Rajon Rondo breaks his hand. Harden and Westbrook have not made it to the bubble while the rest of the Rockets are there. What's going on? We got that for you next. Chilton Auto Body is open to serve the Bay Area with contact-free auto body repair options. Along with free pickup and delivery, Chilton Auto Body now offers virtual estimates and curbside contact-free service from the comfort of your vehicle. Book an appointment today at ChiltonAutoBody.com.
Now back to Joe, Lowe, and Dibs.
I promise you, Dibbers, tell him.
On 95.7, The Game.
Welcome to the Money Spot, one consecutive hour of commercial-free art for you. Our weekend recovering listening audience, because we love you and because we got a lot to get to over the next hour. Nick Friedel from ESPN set to join us in just a moment. Fred Smoot, former Washington Redskins cornerback, coming up in 27 minutes at 8 o'clock. 1 hour from now, 8:30, we begin the process of revealing the fan vote, the top 10 Bay Area athletes of all time. Each day this week, the morning show is going to reveal the even numbers every day at 8:30. So it's number 10 today, number 8 tomorrow, 6, 4, 2, all the way up till Friday. I think you get where I'm going here. Damon Ratto and Kolsky will reveal the odd numbers, 9, 7, 5, 3, and 1. So 1 hour from now, the first name will be revealed. That's at 8:30 this morning. Let's go to the phones. NBA reporter for ESPN, Nick Friedel, kind enough to join us here on 95.7 The Game. All right, Nick, we're a few days into the bubble in Orlando. The friends you have in the media who are down there, the players and coaches you may know that are down there, what are the initial reports you're hearing? How's everyone doing? What's everyone thinking?
Joe, they're saying that they actually feel pretty safe in there, which is a very good sign, of course. They say that for the moment, everybody is taking the precautions very seriously, wearing the mask, trying to keep social distance. Everything in the moment sounds like it's running the way it's supposed to. It's just like everything else, though, and like we've been talking about the last couple months. It's all well and good in the beginning. I think the fear and the worry, not only for the league, but the people who are down there now, is the NBA has set this up as well as they can. The precautions are in place. But what happens a month from now? What happens for the teams 2 months from now who keep winning? So it's all kind of a day-by-day process with the bubble and what's going to happen. But in the moment, the teams and the media members and the players and coaches that are coming in, they feel pretty comfortable about what's going on.
Nick, what are some of the concerns about what might happen? Because in theory, you've got 22 teams and staffs there now. You're going to play the regular season, and six teams are going to drop. And then 2 weeks later, eight teams are going to drop. And you're going to be basically down to eight teams relatively fast once this thing gets rolling. Is it the influx of people that come in from the outside? Is it people that are just going to be wanting to get the heck out and maybe not following the rules? What are the pitfalls or the greatest areas of concern from the folks that you've talked to now that they're actually in it?
JD, I think it's absolutely that people are just like, get me out of here. Down the line, again, not in day three or four or wherever we're at in the moment, but that once this thing gets going, that everybody's going to be like, get me off this campus. I have to see something else. I have to see someone else. I have to do anything that I have to do to try and see some different things and change the scenery a little bit. But the NBA has tried to account for this. We've seen guys get out on the golf course. We're going to see them get out in different journeys in and around Disney, it sounds like, as best they can. It's just, it's the same thing that a league executive told me a few weeks ago, which was, can you imagine going to the same hotel room for 90 plus days?
Wow.
And that's really what it boils down to, guys, because we all know to try and keep anybody's attention now in this day and age and try to keep them in one place is so difficult, even with what's going on in the world. But, J.D., I think the real issue on top of those concerns is, and one the league certainly has, what does the quality of play look like when the game starts? And that, not only as a journalist who covers the league, but as a fan, that's what I'm worried about, because you start these games and guys have been off 4 months.
Right.
And, Lo, you can speak to this as a pro athlete, to stop and then start and ramp it up. We know what those preseason games look like. And you start looking around and thinking, okay, well, when does the change happen? So I think that's the real issue. You know, the teams like the Lakers, the Clippers, the Bucks, the Raptors, everybody's motivated to try and win. They say they are. Now, what happens to the rest of these teams once the games start going?
Oh, no question. You're absolutely right. And it's, you know, the soft tissue and all the different pulls and trying to jump out there and go from zero to 100 overnight. That's going to be tough for these teams. More of the combination is, so they can't leave the bubble, but what's some of the things that you know that is going to be there? Are they getting their clothes washed? How is all these small, minute things that we look at take for granted, but it's going to be huge things for these guys, you know, especially in the a small hotel room, like you said, for 90 days plus could be.
Yeah, Lo, one of the things that they've done, they've turned, somebody was posting a video the other night I saw, and in talking to a few of my friends who are down there, they turned like an old batting cage into a laundry room, that just one machine after another on the side there. So I think everything that can be taken care of, not only for players, coaches, and team executives who may be down there, for the media members, they're trying to make everything as easy as it can be. But we've all said this all along. There are two sides to this, guys. There's the physical side on the floor, and Rondo unfortunately got hurt in practice, and that kind of stuff happens. But I think that's another huge worry for the league, is there's so much focus on, oh, are guys going to want to stay in the bubble that long, go to the hotel? When you're trying to ramp it up like this and you're trying to start games again, guys are going to get hurt. That's going to happen. So the next question is, how do they handle everything when somebody goes down? And that's what the league is trying to work through as we speak. But as far as the day-to-day stuff, the minutia, the NBA really has tried to do everything it can. We've seen all the pictures of the food, and you know, some players are like, we can't complain about the food. Just think about what's going on. So I'd say on the whole, while there are certain things that you're going to hear some frustration about, and there might be things that the league is trying to work through in their protocol, when you talk to all the people that are in there already, the majority of what they're saying is very positive, and they like the direction the NBA has tried to go, because they know that all their needs that can be controlled by the league are trying to be taken care of every single day.
ESPN's Nick Friedell joining us here on 95.7 The Game. The Rockets are in the bubble with two notable exceptions. No James Harden, no Russell Westbrook. What's going on there?
I think James and Russ, you know, were just like, you guys take care of business for the first few days. It seems, sounds like that's kind of the prevailing thought. That the running joke, at least among some of my media friends down there, were like, you know, James Russ, like, I don't want to spend that much time at Disney. I'm going to try to limit my days as much as I can. You know, we might find out that there's something else going on for the moment, but it doesn't sound like anybody is too concerned about them appearing and showing up when they can get there. And I'd add this, when you talk to not only the people in the bubble, but the people that have watched the Rockets all year. They say that if they're motivated and playing together, which guys, as we know, especially out in the Bay, you're never quite sure which Rockets team you're going to get in the postseason. If they're motivated, they're the team that a lot of people think can click, find their rhythm, and get Harden and Westbrook rolling and potentially roll all the way through the West. I don't think that. I still believe that the Clippers are a cut above everybody else in the league. But the Rockets are that choice for the team that plays small ball, that can get up and down the floor in D'Antoni's system, and the team that can find that offensive groove that they're going to need, because so few teams are going to be able to play at that style if they're playing very well. So I think James and Russ will be in there in short order. And the Rockets are that team that a lot of people are picking as the dark horse in the bubble.
You made a great point when you talk about the Clippers being a cut above the rest. What does that do not having Rondo for the Lakers? Is that just, is you think it's a foregone conclusion, barring any other injuries for either team, that the Clippers come out now by the Lakers losing Rondo?
Well, I have believed all season, and certainly now that everybody is healthy on that Clippers roster, that that team is just deeper and better. And yeah, the Lakers, you can't discount LeBron. You know that he's coming into that bubble with something to prove. Because if LeBron didn't want this thing to work, guys, I don't know if the bubble would have ever made it to the point that it has. But he didn't want to lose a season where the Lakers were playing so well and he was playing so well. But I just always thought that if the Clippers were healthy and Kawhi and Paul George were on the floor together with the rest of that roster that is so deep, I just think they are the best. And we really haven't seen them much together on the floor this year because there's been a bunch of different injuries. There's been a bunch of different load management. And I really trust in Doc Rivers to be able to hit the right buttons and get that roster to work the way it's supposed to. So without Rondo, I watched it in Chicago a few years back. He really plays differently. We know about playoff Rondo over the years. He's a calming influence on the floor for a lot of younger guys. You take him off the floor for 6 to 8 weeks, and that really is a big hit for a Lakers team that is already missing Avery Bradley. So it doesn't change overall that I think the Clippers are better. To me, guys, it just opens up the door for the possibility, whether it's Houston or somebody else, that they get hot and maybe they beat the Lakers in a second-round series after they get out of that first one.
Nick, I want to go back to quality of play and watchability, because if there's one concern I would have, it's that after the first weekend, as excited as everybody is to have basketball back, you start to see teams like the Lakers, the Clippers, the Bucks, the teams that everybody really wants to see, they treat that 2 weeks and that 8 games as a preseason. And the quality of play for those teams, the headliners, is not up to snuff. Is there a window where the Memphis, Portland, Pelicans, Sacramento group may have to sort of save those first 2 weeks by, you know, competing really hard for a playoff spot and maybe some of their young stars, you know, sneaking to the top and shining and almost carrying the league in a way? Is that possible, do you think?
JD, absolutely. Yeah, as you were asking there, I'm thinking, you mean they're actually going to have to try after the first weekend? And the answer is yeah. I mean, to save the product of the league on the whole, I think it is crucial for those type of teams to try and give maximum effort throughout those first few weeks. Because I agree with you completely. These games are going to start. The hype machine has been pumping out all kinds of noise about the bubble and the excitement surrounding it for weeks now. People are going to be into what happens in the beginning, and that includes the teams that are down there now. But what happens after those first couple games, especially when, guys, you look at the standings. I mean, like the Spurs, the Wizards, the Suns, you're kind of like, what do they have to play for? So I am sure the league has talked to these teams and said it is crucial for you guys to give us everything that you have and put on a professional product. But that really is a major concern for the league at the moment, because nobody knows how everybody's going to handle this. I mean, we can sit here and go through the possibilities, but until those games start and until you see the performance when guys know there's no postseason to play for and they're ready to go home and get off the campus and out of the bubble, that is a big concern, I think, for the NBA as this thing gets rolling.
NBA reporter for ESPN, Nick Friedel, with us here on 95.7 The Game. Nick, great insight as always. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
All right, guys. I'll talk to you soon.
I'll tell you what, like we always do in these spots, just a round of applause for the NBA all the way around. If they take pictures and they kind of make some jokes about the food, do you. If you make some jokes about the hotel assignments and what they look like, do you. Whatever it takes for you guys to put on some games for us, the people, I'm for. I'm not going to sit here and come down anyone's lane whatsoever. I want sports back so badly. I would love to see some NBA basketball. And I know a lot of these guys probably don't want to be there. I know for guys who have made so much money and experienced some of the greatest luxuries the world has to offer, that shacking up in some of these hotel rooms, eating some of this food for an extended period of stay, you know, people are going to come down their lane and say, look at the rest of the world. You guys sound spoiled right now. But you become accustomed to a certain style of living. You have to downgrade it. You might make some jokes. You might not like it. I get it. No criticisms. No criticisms. Do your thing. You make a joke here or there. If it's a legitimate complaint, that's fine. Thank you for being there. And for those who are going to go out on the court and try to play some hoops, thank you as well. Because I'm stoked for this. I'm not expecting an elite product. I'm not expecting every single game to be highly competitive and worthy of watching. But I'm going to watch as much of this as humanly possible. Good on the NBA. I love the fact that right out of the gate, Nick told us that for all the people he's talking to down there, they feel safe. I mean, right there, that's the number one concern on what's that pyramid, the hierarchy of needs that we have. Lastly, I don't know. But one of them is just like your own security and safety, JD. And if they're feeling safe and secure down there, that's a good start. I'm sure they can improve upon the food and some of the other stuff, but that's a good start. We're so close. We're so close.
It's a great start because, I mean, the only thing that's going to shut this thing down is an outbreak. I mean, let's be honest. And, you know, in theory, with all the protocols that are in play, the likelihood of that happening should go down the farther they get into this, because they're going to be tested and they're going to be confined. I mean, that's the whole point of, you know, the bubble scenario. And then you're also going to have people leaving, you know, in short order. I mean, there's going to be, once this thing gets rolling here in 2.5 weeks, you're going to knock off 6 teams in 2 weeks. You're going to knock off 8 more the next 2 weeks. And then you're going to be down to 8 real quick in the blink of an eye with all those games, you know, going on. And yes, some families are going to have to come in and the protocols are going to change. But I feel like, Lo, this thing has the potential to really build momentum in a positive way each and every day they go without some level of mass spread or some kind of an outbreak. I'm very optimistic once this thing gets rolling, if those numbers are low or none.
So am I. I think, JD, one of the biggest things, though, is for this thing is mental. It's about the shoulders. I mean, we know these guys can run, jump. They can put the ball through the hoop. They can do all those tangibles. But the biggest thing is, how are guys going to handle with the mental aspect of this thing? How are guys not going to be used to doing their normal, being at home, can go to work, you're there, you can shoot to whatever, jump in your car for lunch, you got an hour off or whatever before practice, and freaking go home or go run to the store, do something real quick, go pay. Now it's done. You're in a bubble. You can't necessarily move like that. So what are you going to do? Have a lot of out time. You're going to be working out. First, you can't wait. You're ambitious. You're working out, doing all those things. And you're like, man, I'm tired of seeing the same people. You're going to go in that monotonous thing, seeing everyone the same day, next day, trying to stay away from everyone, trying to like, man, when is this thing going to be over? And then you're going to have guys, the mental attitude that they're going to be in a game and thinking about they're on the sideline down. And like, man, guys are going to be wishing on the sideline, God, we lose this when we're going home. So The mental psyche of this thing, man, is going to be the biggest thing, in my opinion, Joe and JD, is who is going to be the mentally most sound, especially in tough moments, in moments that you know you can quit, in moments you know you can get away with it and quit and just say, it's over, we tried, and it's going to be, are you still going to fight? Are you still going to have that fight or the resilience that you would have if you weren't in this bubble? And that's the thing to me that is going to be questioned most. That's the thing to me that's going to be to see who what these guys are made as individuals, especially in this unprecedented time.
A lot of clowns on the text line saying, I could not survive the bubble. Lots of people. From the 925, Lorenzo, your boy Diva Fortenball would demand to leave the NBA bubble if he didn't get a luxury penthouse hotel room, butler, and VIP service all the time. And then he goes on to call me a name. Let me tell you something, buddy. I would own that bubble. You have to remember something. Pre-relationship Joe was a loner. I enjoy being by myself. I'm a weirdo, man. I am absolutely a weirdo. I like being by myself. I don't want lots of people around me. You give me the opportunity to go play hoops in Disney World and get away from everything for a few months, potentially, I'm going to be okay with that. I'm going to shack up in that room. I'm going to do my thing. Okay, I'm going to do lots of reading, lots of video game playing, lots of nerdy stuff. No one's going to be excited about it. I'd survive this bubble. You'd see your boy in the finals shocking the world winning finals MVP. Then where you at, 925? Where you at? After that, I get my new contract. Then I end up getting into a relationship probably, and then it's going to be the luxury penthouse, hotel room, and all that stuff. I would have crushed this bubble. This ain't that bad. It's bad from a perspective of if you're worth $100 million and you're used to everything being first class, yeah, this isn't that great. And I can understand that. You become accustomed to a certain style of living. But it's all about context. There are people who struggle just to get by on a day-to-day basis. So you put them in the bubble, they'd be getting meals, four meals a day, they get this nice hotel room, stuff like that. To them, this would be the Taj Mahal, right? It'd be a huge upgrade. I think that the NBA is going to play out like this. And this goes to what JD's saying. I think the early action is going to be pretty lousy for two reasons. One, I think you're going to have a decent amount of teams and players that just don't want to be there and they want to get out of there. I think Washington's going to be like that. I think the Brooklyn Nets are going to be like that. And those games are going to be relatively lousy. And that's fine. I'm okay with that. And number two, and this is even more important, coming back going full throttle without ramping your body up the right way, a lot of soft tissue injuries, a lot of muscle pulls, things like that. I think teams are going to be very cautious. If you're Milwaukee, you got a 7.5 game lead with 8 to play, right? You're not going to send Giannis out there 35 minutes a night for 8 straight games. Teams are going to take it easy and everyone's going to yell and scream about load management. Not really. It's not load management. It's seriously going to be about working the muscles and the bodies back into shape. So just when we get done with this 8-game run, that's going to be 80-some total games, people are going to probably start complaining that the quality of the basketball isn't great, but then the playoffs are going to start. So you're on to the postseason, and you're going to have the opening round, and there might be a couple good series in there, but by and large, you're going to have some very overwhelmed teams, for example, whoever the 8 seed is that gets Milwaukee, and they're probably just going to want out of there, and that's fine too. But JD, like you said, before you know it, we're going to be down to 8 teams. And at that point, there's going to have been enough time in the bubble where you can get the bodies back into shape. The competitive level of basketball can go up from a physical standpoint and from a mental standpoint, because if you make it that far, there's no sense in trying to go home. Now you're going to play to win this thing, and I think that's when it's going to get good. So just when it really starts to get to a point where you might say, oh, this level of basketball sucks, it's going to ramp up and it's going to be fine, right? Now remember, the NBA versus MLB versus college football versus pro football, these guys look to be doing it the best, man. They look to be doing it the best. They got a nice bubble set up down there. They could be showing the country how we should be going about this business, right? It's not as if America's leaders have done a great job here. It could be the NBA that shows us how to get some things done. So just be positive, for crying out loud.
Well, and I think it's a situation where, you know, when you look at it, people are going to, you know, I think it's all built for those final 8 teams, Joe. It's built for them to be able to ramp up, to be able to not have to push their main guys. Because, look, seeding is irrelevant. Unless you're one of the teams fighting for the last spot, I mean, home court advantage is completely irrelevant. So they basically give the top, let's say, 13 teams an opportunity to really slow build. A couple weeks of practice, 8 games, and I think what's ultimately going to happen is those teams are going to use it like a preseason, like a warm-up. And look, we are a nation of complainers when it comes to sports and those things. People are going to not like what they see, I have a feeling, about 3 or 4 days in. But that's where I think the one thing that might have to save those first couple of weeks is that group in the Western Conference where you've got Memphis with Ja Morant, Portland with Damian Lillard and C.J. McCollum, the Pelicans with Zion Williamson, and then a young group in Sacramento that believes that they're in the mix with those other three teams. I think those four teams, as unsexy as it may seem to just put those four city team names out there, I think those four teams are going to captivate the country, frankly, almost like an NCAA tournament, because their games are going to matter. Their games are going to be important. Those teams are going to play hard against some of the other teams and battle down to the end. And I think as much as it's, we all want it to be about Milwaukee and the Clippers and the Lakers and LeBron early, those four teams, low, there's a window for them to steal the show.
Yeah, I think that you're going to have a more competitive basketball than what people think. After guys get their legs on them, they're out there practicing and stuff right now. It's something about it, JD. Dibs last week was just saying, oh, well, guys want to be there, guys want to play. When you're a professional, I don't care. You go out there, you think of you playing whatever. You go out there, and all of a sudden you start playing, you're like, I got to play. It's just your name's on it. Guys aren't just going to go in there and say, okay, look at me. I'm just going to shut it down. I think that they understand even more now so than ever that what's at stake here. I think when you look at the money that's at stake, when you think about why they're going, look at what the NBA is doing. Look how the millions and millions of dollars they're spending to go to a friggin' bubble, to go and try to figure this thing out, security, all the things that they're going to, the things that are being added in this. I think these teams and the organizations, they're saying, the world's watching us, guys. These coaches and these owners and the people in front office, they have been talking. This is a unified front that's been talking. They're saying, guys, we're the first in and the world's watching us. This stage for us, you'd have no idea what the stage and the magnitude that people are watching us and the scrutiny that we're under. Let's not mess this up. Your families, you don't think these coaches are sitting there and say, hey, guys, your families are going to be watching. You don't want to represent them. Anything, get out. You guys got to be professional. You're men, for heaven's sakes. I'm telling you, the onus is on a lot of these guys. Haven't been in this type of situation, but I know what teams do. I know how head coaches are. Know how these organizations are. And you're talking about a multi-billion-dollar industry. The stage is big. The NBA stage is going to be bigger than it's ever been right now. And they understand that.
You know what? I'm with you on that, too. I am. And it's wrong to put the NBA players and any other athletes in America that are coming back in this position. But at some point, we kind of need to look around the world and maybe feel a little humiliation that everyone else is starting to figure this out and we're not. German soccer has been going on for almost 2 months. English soccer and Italian soccer has been going on for a month. Remember Italy at the beginning of all this? We looked at Italy like with disgust. Oh, man, look at Italy. They're a mess. Italy kind of figured it out. They're playing soccer again. They're playing soccer in Spain, right? When I was watching UFC this weekend, I was watching that on the iPad, and then on the TV I had like Aussie rules football on. Australia, New Zealand, they're back at it. Soccer all around Europe is back at it. And then here's us trying to do a soccer bubble in Orlando, infections left and right because MLS can't figure it out. Like, at some point, there has to be a little sign of humiliation, a little feeling as an American, like, damn, man, can we please get back on par with the rest of the world? You see how many countries won't allow American passports anymore? Like, it's okay to start feeling a little bit of shame and humiliation for how we stack up against everybody else. So when you want to take shots at NBA players who are trying to put this thing together, think about that for a second. They're the ones that are trying to make us look good. Not our politicians, right? Not our leaders, not our business leaders. These NBA guys, if they can pull this off, will put us at least close to on par with what the rest of the world figured out a while ago. You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station. Good morning. Welcome to your 8 o'clock hour of Joe Lowe and John Dickinson here on 95.7 The Game. Great to have you with us. 30 minutes from now, we reveal number 10 on the top 10 greatest Bay Area athletes of all time list. Every day this week at 8:30 a.m., we are going to reveal an even number. Today, number 10. Tomorrow, number 8. Wednesday, number 6. You get where I'm going. In the afternoons, Damon Ratto and Kolsky, they will be responsible for revealing the odd numbers, 9, 7, 5, 3, and 1, which will come Friday afternoon. Right now, we're going to the phones. Former Washington Redskins cornerback Fred Smoot joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Fred, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. The big news out of Washington this morning, owner Daniel Snyder has announced that they are retiring the Redskins name and the Redskins logo. As a former member of the Washington Redskins, what do you think about that?
You know, being a former Redskin, first of all, thanks for having me, fellas. Being a former Redskin, I seen it coming. You know, I remember my rookie year, me and Champ was riding on the bus to, like, my first preseason game, and it was in Kansas City, and it was a group of Native Americans standing to the side protesting, and then I asked him what was going on, and he told me, you're going to see that a couple of times, the place we go, because everybody don't love this name. And I started thinking then, and this was in 2001, you know, one day we're going to have to look this in the face, and we're going to have to deal with it. And 2020 has been a year of change and a year of adapting to things. And I think Nas got pushed to the forefront.